you tuned to yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. In this hour drama, the Campbell Playhouse adapts Booth Tarkington's story, The Magnificent Ambersons, which would famously become Orson Welles' second motion picture after Citizen Kane, and was Oscar-nominated after its release in 1942. Also famously, this movie had some drama of its own, as RKO Studios apparently cut nearly an hour from the film and spun it to have a happy ending, of which Welles never forgave the studio for. We'll hear a truer adaptation in this broadcast next on CBS with Welles and more from October 29th, 1939.
Presents the Campbell Playhouse. Orson Welles, producer.
Good evening. This is Orson Welles. Tonight again, our scene is America. America at the turn of the century, in the days that saw the rise, the reign, and the decline of the Magnificent Ambersons. The book was a bestseller, but The Magnificent Ambersons is something better than that, better than a bestseller that still sells. It lives on as the truest, cruelest picture of the growth of the Middle West and the liveliest portrait left to us of the people who made it grow. It's better than a good book. It's Booth Tarkington's best. And we'll do our best by it on the radio tonight, and luckily, we have with us a great American actor to help. An actor who, in the living theater and in motion pictures, has created a notable gallery of American portraits ranging from Ring Lardner's Elmer the Great to Sinclair Lewis's Dodsworth. A gallery which includes the simplest of American mortals and even two presidents, the legendary chief executive of Gabriel over the White House and Mr. Abraham Lincoln himself. You've guessed his name. It's Walter Houston.
And now, The Magnificent Ambersons with Walter Houston and Orson Welles.
Dear Miss Anderson, when I called upon you this afternoon to express my regret for last night's misfortune, I was informed by your butler that you did not desire to see me. You seem to care a great deal for base vials, Miss Anderson. If I promise never to break another one, may I not hope that you will relent and consent to receive in person the apology of your very contrite and devoted admirer, Eugene Morgan. To Miss Anderson, Anderson Mansion, Ambersons Boulevard, Ambersons Edition.
You heard that word Ambersons a lot in those days, in that town. Everybody knew the Ambersons, and it was quite unnecessary for the young man to address his letter so carefully. The magnificence of the Ambersons began in 1873. Their splendor lasted throughout all the years that saw their Midland town spread and darken into a city. Around 1800, Major Amberson had bought 200 acres of land at the end of National Avenue. Through this tract, he had built broad streets and cross streets, paved them with cedar block, and curbed them with stone. He'd set up fountains here and there in at symmetrical intervals, placed cast iron statues painted white. And all this art showed a profit from the start. The lots had sold well, and there was a rush to build in the new addition. Its main thoroughfare was called Ambersons Boulevard, and here now stood the new Ambersons Mansion, which was the pride of the town.
Yes, sir, $60,000 for the woodwork alone.
And hot and cold water, upstairs and down.
Well, they got a ballroom there, takes up the whole third story.
And a glass dome, green glass it is, way up in the air, and arches and turrets, and one of them new stone porches. They call it a porte cochere.
Well, sir, I guess the President of the United States would be tickled to swap the White House for the new Ambersons Mansion if the Major give him the chance.
Yes, sir.
But by the almighty dollar, you bet your sweet life the Major wouldn't.
Now, of these Ambersons, at the time this story begins, there were three. The old Major and his two children, Fred and Isabel. Of Fred, it was generally understood that one day he would go into politics.
Kind of a good thing to have an Amberson in Congress. Makes it pleasant when the family goes traveling.
Meanwhile, he was to be seen every afternoon on National Avenue, perched high on the seat of the newest and fanciest rig in town, driving a pair of dashing bays with great gesturing and waving of his skin-tight lemon gloves. Of Isabel, it was known that she'd been to a young lady's school in the East and later to a finishing school in Paris.
But now I'm back. Back for good this time, I guess. And it's nice to be home.
Home being the Amberson mansion on Amberson Boulevard, of which Isabel Amberson was now the hostess. Well, during those days, people had time for things. Time to gossip. Time for a lot of things. They even had time to dance square dances, quadrilles and lances, the raquette and schottisches and polkas and such whims as the Portland fancy. All gone now. Gone like the all-day picnics in the woods and like that prettiest of all vanished customs, the serenade. Of a summer night, young men would bring an orchestra under a pretty girl's window and flute, harp, fiddle, cello, cornet, and bass viol would presently release their melodies to the dulcet stars. Indeed, it was at one of these serenades that an event occurred which was to have a profound influence on the fate of the Ambersons.
Eugene Morgan. It's too bad. Likeliest boy in town he was, and not really given to drink. Just celebrating.
Stepped right through the bass viol, he did. Made matchwood of it.
Too bad it had to be right under Miss Isabel's window, and right at this time, too.
When Eugene Morgan called the next day to apologize, Isabel refused to see him, and it was then that he wrote her that letter, and 3 weeks later, Major Amberson announced the marriage of his daughter to one of the town's leading young men of business, Wilbur Minifer, no breaker of bass viols or of hearts. No serenader at all.
Wilbur Minifer.
Well, she'll be a good wife to Wilbur. And they'll have the worst spoiled lot of children this town will ever see.
Well, how on earth do you make that out?
She couldn't love Wilbur, could she? Well, it'll all go to her children, and she'll ruin them.
The prophetess proved to be mistaken in a single detail only. Wilbur and Isabel did not have children. They had only one child. At the age of 9, it pains me more than any man to admit, George Amberson Minifer, the Major's one grandchild, was a princely terror. With his long brown curls and the silk sash and lace collar in which his mother dressed him, he was dreaded not only in Amberson Addition, but in other quarters through which he galloped daily on his white pony.
Oh, look at the girly curls! Say, Bub, where'd you steal your mother's old sash?
Your sister stole it for me. She stole it off our clothesline and gave it to me.
Yeah. You go get your hair cut. I haven't got a sister.
I know you haven't at home. I mean the one that's in jail.
I dare you get down off that pony.
Sure I'll get down off the pony. Whoa, boy.
Well, I dare you to come inside that gate.
I'm coming.
Yeah? Well, I dare you halfway here. I dare you.
Hey! Oh, boy! Kill me!
Now, what's going on here? Stop this and get out of this yard, young man. I said...
You stop that, you. Take your hands off me. I guess you don't know who I am.
Yes, I do know. I know who you are. You're a disgrace to your mother. Your mother ought to be ashamed of herself to allow...
Shut up about my mother.
She ought to be ashamed. A woman that lets a bad boy like you...
You pull down your vest, you old billy goat, you. Pull down your vest, wire your chin, and go to...
George.
Yes, Mama?
Is this letter from the Reverend Malik Smith the truth?
He's an old liar.
George, you mustn't say liar. He says you insulted and brutally assaulted his son. Is that true?
Well, how old am I?
You're 12.
And he says in that letter I'm older and stronger than his son. And he's 13.
What about the other thing, Georgie? Did you tell the Reverend Smith Did you say...
Listen here, Mama. Grandpa wouldn't even wipe his shoe on that old storyteller, would he?
Georgia mustn't.
I mean, none of the Ambersons wouldn't have anything to do with him, would they? He doesn't even know you, does he, Mama?
George, that isn't what we're talking about.
I bet if he wanted to see any of the Amberson family, he'd have to go around to the side door.
No, dear.
Yes,
no,
he
dear.
Would, Mama. So what does it matter if I did say something to him he didn't like? That kind of people, I don't see why you can't say anything you want to them. They're just riffraff, that's what they are, Mama. Just riffraff.
And that's what they were to him. Riffraff. Everybody in town. Except the Ambersons. His arrogance, I'm sorry to say, grew with the years. There were people, grown people too, who said they did hope to see the day when that boy would get his comeuppance. That's the word they used, comeuppance. But when George Amberson Minifer came home from college for the holidays at Christmastide in his sophomore year, nothing about him encouraged any hope that he, George Amberson Minifer, had received his comeuppance. Cards were out for a ball in his honor, and this pageant of the tenantry was held in the ballroom of the Amberson mansion the night after his arrival. George, white-gloved with a gardenia in his buttonhole, stood with his mother and his Uncle Fred in the big red and gold drawing room downstairs to receive the guests. He was doing his duty, greeting two pretty girls with whom he had grown up.
How do you do?
How do you do? Have you very well. Of course
Mr.
I do.
Oh,
very well
did.
Indeed.
Oh, he did. He
all right.
Did.
Mother.
Yes, George?
Mother, who's that queer-looking duck?
Why, George, dear, whomever do you mean?
Over there. It's coming towards us.
Why?
It's nobody we know, is it, Mother?
George, you hear you. Hello, Eugene.
Good evening, Isabel.
How nice of you to come, Eugene.
I'm only here for one thing. To have a dance with you.
Why, of course. Eugene, this is my son, George, Mr. Eugene Morgan.
Hello, George.
How do you do?
Well, if it wasn't so big, Isabel, I wouldn't know it had been so long.
Yes, Eugene, it has been long.
Well, how about that dance?
Certainly, Eugene. A little later, I'd love it.
A little later then, Isabel, I'll come for you. Goodbye, George. Nice to meet you. I wondered what you'd be like. You're almost as good looking as you ought to be with that mother of yours. And that's better than any boy ought to look. Goodbye, Isabel. I'll come back for that dance.
Still a pretty queer looking duck.
George.
Yes, Mother.
Oh, George.
Yes, Mother.
George, this is Miss Lucy Morgan.
Oh, how do you do? I remember you very well indeed.
But you don't, George. Miss Morgan's from out of town, and it's the first time you've ever seen her.
Oh, I'm sorry. How do you do?
You might take her up to the dancing, George. I think you've pretty well done your duty here.
Be delighted. Delighted. What did you say your name was?
Morgan.
That's a funny name.
Everybody else's name always is.
What's the rest of it?
Lucy. Is Lucy a funny name, too?
Oh, Lucy's very much all right.
Thanks about letting my name be Lucy.
As George conducted his partner to the ballroom, their progress was slow, and to George's mind, it did not lack stateliness. How could it? Musicians hired especially for him were sitting in a grove of palms in the hall and now tenderly playing for his pleasure. Dozens and scores of flowers had been brought to life and tended to this hour that they might sweeten the air for him while they died. It is to be doubted if anybody ever felt more illustrious or more negligently grand than George Amberson Minifer felt at this party.
Mr. Minifer?
Yes?
What are you studying at college?
A lot of useless guff.
Well, then why don't you study some useful guff?
What do you mean, useful?
Something you'd use later in your business or profession.
Well, I don't expect to go into any business or profession.
Well, what are you going to do? What do you want to be?
A yachtsman. At that same moment, in a small room set apart for the smokers on the second floor of the Amberson mansion, two old friends were engaged in conversation. One was the Honorable Fred Amberson. The other was the gentleman whom George Amberson Minifer had classified some minutes earlier as a queer-looking duck.
Gene Morgan, you haven't changed at all.
What did you expect, Fred?
20 years since you left. Makes some difference in faces, 20 years, but not in behavior, I guess.
If you remember, Fred, my own behavior began to be different about that long ago. Quite suddenly.
Yeah. Been stepping in any bass vials lately, Gene? Isabel know you're here?
Yes, I just saw her. Where's Wilbur? I didn't see him.
Isabel's husband never was one for parties, you know, and he hasn't been so well lately. He's probably gone home already. Gene, life's an odd thing if we look back, isn't it?
Yes, it's probably going to be odder still if we could look forward.
Probably.
However, I still dance like an Indian, don't you?
No, I leave that to my nephew, George. He does the dancing for the family.
Tell me, what do people in this town think about young George, generally?
Well, a lot of people that are glad to express their opinions about him quite strongly, too.
Yes? What's the matter with him, Fred?
Too much Amberson, I suppose, for one thing. And for another, Isabel just fell down and worshipped him from the day he was born. I don't see how she doesn't see the truth about that boy of hers. She thinks he's a little tin god on wheels. I tell you, Jean, she actually sits and worships him. You can hear it in her voice when she speaks to him. You can see it in her eyes when she looks at him. My heavens, I often wonder, what does she see when she looks at him?
Well, she sees something that we don't see.
What?
An angel.
Tell me, Jean, when you met George tonight, did you see an angel?
No. All I saw was a remarkably good-looking fool boy with the pride of Satan and a set of nice new drawing-room manners. No, Fred. Mothers see the angel in us because the angel is there. Mothers are always right.
Yes, I know what you mean, Jean. You mean that George's mother's always right.
I'm afraid she's always been.
She was wrong once, old fellow. At least so it seemed to me.
No, she... Well, goodbye, Fred. I'm going to dance.
Who will?
Isabel, does that surprise you?
Well, it startles me a little. You're jumping up like that to go and dance with Isabel. 20 years seems to have passed, but have they? My heavens, old times starting all over again.
Old times? Not a bit. There aren't any old times. When times are gone, they're not old, they're dead. There aren't any times, but new times.
Oh, how's that for a bit of freshness?
What was?
Oh, that queer-looking duck dancing with my mother. See, they're waving his hand at me like that. I don't know him from Adam.
You don't need to. He wasn't waving his hand to you. He meant me. I'm going to dance with him pretty soon.
Say, who is he?
The queer-looking duck.
Yeah. I suppose he's some old widower.
Yes, he's a widower. I should have told you before. He's my father.
Oh, if I'd known he was your father, I wouldn't have made fun of him. I'm sorry.
You know, I don't mind your being such a lofty person at all. I think it's ever so interesting. But Papa's a great man.
Is he? Well, let's hope so, I'm sure.
I'm just beginning to understand.
Understand what?
What it means to be a real Amberson in this town. Papa told me something about it before we came, but I see he didn't say half enough.
Did your father say he knew the family before he left you?
I don't think he meant to boast of it. He spoke of it quite calmly. You'll excuse me. I really must be going now.
Hey, wait a minute. Wait. What are you going to do after 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon?
A whole lot of things. Every minute filled up.
All right. The snow is fine for sleighing. I'll come for you in the cutter 10 minutes after 2.
I can't possibly go.
If you don't, I'm going to sit in the cutter in front of your gate all afternoon. If you try to go out with anybody else, he's got to whip me before he gets you. If you think I'm not in earnest, you're at liberty to make quite a big experiment.
I don't think I've often had so large a compliment as that. Especially on such short notice. And yet, I don't think I'll go with you.
You'll be ready at 10 minutes after 2.
No, I won't.
Yes, you will.
Yes, I will.
Where's Wilbur?
Wilbur had a headache. Jeannie said he hoped you'd excuse him.
I don't think automobiling is quite your husband's speed anyway, Isabel. Well, let's get started.
You sure you're not scared?
Of course not.
You probably have to walk home, but the exercise will be good for
you. Don't you believe him.
Up you go, Isabel.
I don't care what you say. I still think it's thrilling.
All righty. Here we go.
You know what? Gene tells me this chafing dish of his travels 10 miles an hour.
Next year, we expect to do 18.
By then, there'll be a law forbidding the sale of automobiles, the way there is with concealed weapons.
Get up, Leonard. Gee, Lucy, I'm sorry you're cold.
I'm not anymore, with the wind behind us. And I do hate to go back. It's so pretty out here in the country.
Yeah, it is nice.
Is this all yours? The Ambersons, I mean, all this land? Beautiful.
Yeah, it used to be. It's getting all too much built up now. The way it used to be, it was like a gentleman's country estate. It's the way we ought to keep it. They let these people take too many liberties. What are you laughing at now?
Oh, nothing. Well, for heaven's sake.
What?
Well, look over there, down the road. It's Papa. He's having trouble with the machine.
What'd I tell you about those old sewing machines?
They're not old sewing machines. I wish
Get
you
up.
Wouldn't say things
Get
like
up.
That. Well, you're not going to pass them and just leave them stranded there.
We'll come back and pick them up to show them horses that belong on the road, not sewing machines. Get up, Henderson.
Oh, George, be careful.
Get please. Up. Why don't you get a horse? Get a horse!
Huh?
Get a horse!
George!
Hey,
oh, George, be careful. Look where you're driving. There's a ditch on that side. No, no!
Here are you.
Oh, George.
Are you hurt, Lucy?
No, oh, no problem.
Are you all right?
There's no back to weather, man. Nothing the matter with him at all.
George, are you hurt?
Oh, don't make a fuss, Mother. Nothing's the matter. Only that darn silly horse broke away.
Well, you catch cold, George. Here. Let me brush the snow.
Oh, let me alone, Mother. You ruin your gloves. You're getting the snow all over yourself.
You're not. Why not try riding in my machine, George? Come on, climb in, everybody. Come on, Isabel. All aboard, Lucy.
Oh,
George.
Look at your feet, George.
Oh, no,
you must
Mother.
Clean them off, or you'll catch cold.
Oh, Mother.
I can't have you catching cold. Now, here, let me brush them for you.
Stop that, Mama.
But you mustn't ride with wet feet.
Well, they're not. For heaven's sake, get in. You're standing in the snow yourself, Mother.
He's all right, Isabel. Come on, up here with me. Ready?
We're ready, but how about this wreck of yours?
Well, we'll see. She breathes. She stirs. She seems to feel the thrill of life along her keel.
As I walk along the void of the low... Hey, come on there, you two. Sing. It'll keep you warm.
George, I want to thank you.
Along the void
oh, for what?
You tried to swing underneath me and break the fall for me when we went over... I knew you were doing that. It was nice of you.
It wasn't any fall to speak of. Couldn't have... Hurt either one of us.
Friendly of it. Off it quick, too. I'll not forget.
To walk along the void of belonging, in my independent air. To hear the girls pray.
Papa. Papa, what makes George Minifer behave like he does?
What do you mean, Missy?
He can be so rude and disagreeable and arrogant. Yet this afternoon, he tried to save my life. Wouldn't even let me thank him. I don't understand him at all, Papa.
He's sensitive, Lucy.
Rather. But why is he? He does anything he likes to without any regard for what people think. Why should he mind so furiously when the least little thing reflects upon him or on anything or anybody connected with him?
Yeah, and that's one of the greatest puzzles of human vanity, dear. I don't pretend to know the answer. In all my life, the most arrogant people I've known have been the most sensitive. But he's still a boy. There's plenty of fine stuff in him. Can't help but be. He's Isabel Amberson's son.
You liked her pretty well once, didn't you, Papa?
I do still, Lucy.
Oh, she's lovely.
Yeah. Yes, I know.
I wonder sometimes. I wonder why she happened to marry Mr. Minifer.
Oh, Wilbur Minifer's all right. He's a quiet sort of a man, but he's a good man and kind. Those are things that count. No, Lucy, I wouldn't worry too much about George. You need only to remember three things to explain all that's good and bad about George.
Three?
He's Isabel's child. He's an Amberson. And he's a boy.
Well, Mr. Bowles, of those three things, which are the good ones and which are the bad ones?
All of them.
Even after the turn of the century in that Midland town, it seemed impossible to doubt that the Ambersons were entrenched in their nobility behind polished and glittering barriers which were as solid as they were brilliant and would last forever. And to those fervent souls who continued to hope that the youngest of the Ambersons, George Amberson Minifer, would soon get his comeuppance, the following year, I'm afraid, brought little comfort, or the next. But in his last year at college, three things occurred to upset the even tenor of George Amberson Minifer's life.
Wilbur Minifer, beloved husband of Isabel Amberson Minifer, and father of George Amberson Minifer, died at his home last night after a brief illness.
Wilson Minifer.
Quiet, man. Town will hardly know he's gone.
That was the first thing. His father's death. Second, certain changes in the Midland town where he lived. Perplexing at first, then irritating. Every time you came home for the holidays, you saw new things. New faces at the dances. Riffraff, people whose names you never heard of. And the town itself was less and less familiar. Even in Amberson Addition, there was drastic and tragic change. The first owners of the big houses sold them or rented them to boarding house keepers. Cheaper tenants took their places. Rents were lower and lower, the houses shabbier and shabbier. And not even the Ambersons themselves seemed able to stem the tide. And third, there was a certain subject upon which George and Lucy Morgan found it impossible to agree.
Whoa, Pendennis.
Oh. Why are you stopping, George? Why don't you go on?
Lucy? When are you going to marry me?
Oh, not for years and years.
Why not?
You're too young.
Is that the only reason?
Oh, I don't know, George. Everything...
What about everything?
Well, everything is so unsettled.
You aren't the queerest girl. Why, what's unsettled?
Well, for one thing, you haven't settled on anything to do. At least if you have, you've never spoken of it. What are you going to do, George?
Well, I tell you, I expect to lead an honorable life. Now that my father's dead, that sort of makes me the head of the family. That's Uncle Fred.
You don't really mean to have any regular business or profession at all?
I certainly do not.
I didn't say so.
I suppose it's your father's influence that makes you think I ought to do something, is that it?
No, I've never once spoken to him about it. Never.
But you know, without talking to him, that's the way he does feel about it.
Oh, yes.
Do you think I'd be much of a man if I let another man dictate to me my own way of life?
Well, George, who is dictating your
life? I don't believe in the whole world washing dishes and selling potatoes and trying law cases. I dare say I don't care any more for your father's ideals than he does for mine. So if your father would just mind his own business...
Take me home, George. Please, take me home at once.
If that's the way you want it, all right.
That's the way I want it.
Well, all right, that's the way you want it. That's the way you want it. Get up, Pendennis. Get up.
A little brandy, Eugene?
No, thanks.
How about you, George?
Thanks.
Oh, it's too bad that Lucy couldn't be here tonight. I do hope it's nothing serious, Eugene.
Just a headache. She asked me to excuse her, Isabel.
Maybe you'll take her out driving tomorrow, George. That'll do her good.
Maybe.
You know, Jean, I heard the other day there's another automobile firm opened up here in town.
Oh, I'm bound to have competition.
That's part of the game, isn't it, Eugene?
Of course. Shows business is good.
Maybe they'll drive you out of business.
Or else the two of them will drive all the rest of us off the street.
Not at all, Isabel. We'll just extend the streets.
You see how simple it is, Fred?
It isn't the distance from the center of the town, it's the time it takes to get there. Automobiles will change all that.
Do you really believe, Eugene, that automobiles are going to change the face of the land?
Yeah, they're already doing it. And it can't be stopped. No, automobiles are...
Automobiles are a useless nuisance.
What did you say, George?
Well, I said all automobiles were a nuisance. They'll never amount to anything but a nuisance. They never had no business to be invented.
You forget, George, that Mr. Morgan makes them and also did his share in inventing them. If you weren't so thoughtless, he might think you rather offensive.
Well, that'd be too bad. I don't think I could survive there.
George.
Well, I'm not so sure that George is wrong about automobiles. With all their speed forward, they may be a step backward in civilization. That is, in spiritual civilization. It may be that they will not add to the beauty of the world, nor to the life of men's souls. It may be that George is right, and that the spiritual alteration will be bad for us. Perhaps in 10 or 20 years from now, if we can see the inward change in men by that time, I shouldn't be able to defend the gasoline engine. But would have to agree with George that automobiles had no business to be invented. Well, Fred, I'm afraid it's getting late, and I have an appointment with my foreman. So I'd better go along.
Oh, but Jean...
Eugene.
No, good night. Don't bother to take me to the door. I'll find my way out.
Good night, Eugene.
Yes, good night, Jean. Good night.
George, dear, what did you mean?
Just what I said.
You hurt him, George.
He didn't sound very hurt to me. He sounded pretty cheerful, if you ask me. What made you think he was hurt?
I know him.
He must think.
Well, I don't care much what Mr. Morgan thinks. I suppose he's trying to borrow money from you, Uncle Fred. That automobile factory of his.
No, George. I think Eugene Morgan's perfectly able to finance his own inventions these days.
George, what made you say that?
Well, he strikes me as that sort of a man, that's all. Anyway, I want to know what he's hanging around here for anyway.
George, Mr. Morgan's an old friend.
By Jove, George, you are a puzzle.
In what way, I'd like to know?
Well, it's a new style of courting a pretty girl for a fellow to go deliberately out of his way to try and make an enemy of her father. That's a new way to win a woman, that is.
Is there anything wrong, Isabel? You've been so quiet all afternoon.
Nothing, Eugene. It's this weather. The end of summer.
It's been a very happy summer for me.
A few more weeks, and it'll be gone.
There'll be other summers, Isabel.
Time changes things, Eugene. And once they're changed, you can't bring them back. Things are like smoke. You know how a wreath of smoke goes up from a chimney? You see it getting thinner and thinner. And then in such a little while, it isn't there at all. Nothing is left but the sky. And the sky keeps on being just the same forever.
Things won't change for you, Isabel. You'll always have me and George.
It's George that's troubling me, Eugene. Why doesn't he like you? He doesn't have any reason. He says so himself.
Well, boys can't help their likes and dislikes, Isabel. I think perhaps he sensed from the first that I cared a great deal about you. Even when I was so careful not even to show you how immensely I did care.
Gene, I can't believe that.
Well, someday he'll have to know how we feel about each other, and I think it should be from you that he learned that.
Oh, Eugene.
It's only fair to George. Much better that he should hear it from you than from someone else. Through gossip, maybe.
Oh, I know. I know you're right, Eugene. And I will tell him. I tried to tell him last night, only... Oh, Eugene, it's so hard. Let me wait until just before he goes back to school.
No, sooner, Isabel. Sooner. For all our sakes, sooner.
But it's only such a few days till he leaves. Surely a few days can't make any difference.
Good gracious, Georgie. What's up?
I've got to talk to you.
Say, what's happened to your face?
Oh, forget about that. I've just been in a fight. I've heard what people are saying.
Saying about what? For heaven's sake, if you're going to talk, be coherent.
The whole town's talking about my mother and that man Morgan. They say my mother is going to marry him. And that proves she was too fond of him before my father died. Everybody in town knows about it but me.
Heavens, is that what you're so excited about? Why do you listen to stuff like that?
I'm glad I did listen. I have a right to know. Did you know it? Did you?
Georgie, you can be sure there's been more gossip in this place about the Amberson family than any other family. You see, the more prominent you are, the more gossip there is about you. And the more people would like to pull you down. But they can't do it as long as you refuse to listen. The minute you notice it, it's got you.
Is that all you've got to say?
It's about all there is to say, Georgie. There's nothing to be done about
it. You propose to sit here and let this riffraff bandy my mother's good name about it. Is that what you propose to do? Didn't you understand me when I told you that people are saying my mother means to marry this man?
I understood
and
you.
And you think if such an unspeakable marriage took place, it'd make people believe they've been wrong and say... You know what they'd say?
I don't believe it would. There'd be more badness in the bad mouths and more silliness in the silly mouths. But it wouldn't hurt Isabel and Eugene if they had decided to marry.
Good heavens, you speak of it so calmly!
Why shouldn't they marry if they want to? It's their own affair.
Why shouldn't they? Why shouldn't they?
I don't see anything precisely monstrous about two people getting married when they're both free and care about each other. What's the matter with marrying?
It would be monstrous. Monstrous, even if this horrible scandal hadn't happened. But now, in the face of this... Oh, you can sit there and even think of it, your own sister.
For heaven's sake, don't be so theatrical. Come back here.
What is it?
Don't you speak to your mother about this.
I don't intend to, but I am going to do something about it. You can be sure of that. I'm going to do something about it. You see if I don't.
You, George. How do you do? Your mother expects to go driving with me, I believe. If you'll be so kind as to send word to her that I'm here.
No.
I beg your pardon. I said...
I heard you, Mr. Morgan. Said you had an engagement with my mother. I told you no.
Well, just what is the difficulty?
My mother will have no interest in knowing that you came for today or any other day.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
I doubt if I can make it much plainer, but I'll try. You're not wanted in this house, Mr. Morgan, now or at any other time. Perhaps you'll understand this.
Fred will bring this to you, dear Isabel. He is waiting while I write. He and I have talked things over. And before he gives this to you, he will tell you what has happened. I should have been better prepared for what took place today. I ought to have known it was coming. A week ago, I thought the time had come when I could ask you to marry me, and you were dear enough to tell me. Sometime, it might come to that. Well, you and I, left to ourselves, wouldn't pay much attention to things like slander and talk. But now we're faced with not the slander of our own fear of it, because we haven't any. But someone else's fear of it. Your son's. And that frightens me. Let me explain a little. I don't think he'll change. At 21 or 22, so many things appear solid, permanent, and terrible, which 40 sees are nothing but disappearing miasma. 40 can't tell 20 about this. That's the pity of it. 20 can only find out by getting to be 40. And so we come to this, dear. Will you live your life your own way or George's way? Dear, it breaks my heart for you, but what you have to oppose now in your son is the history of your own selfless and perfect motherhood. Are you strong enough, Isabel? Can you make the fight? I promise you that if you will take heart for it, you will find so quickly that it has all amounted to nothing. You shall have happiness, and in a little while, only happiness. I'm saying too much for wisdom, my dear. But, oh, my dear, won't you be strong? Such a little short strength it would need. Don't strike my life down twice, dear. This time, I've not deserved it. Indeed.
Did you read it, dear?
Yes, Mother, I did.
All of it?
Certainly. Simply the most offensive piece of writing that I've ever held in my hands.
But, George, I thought...
Don't you really think this was a pretty insulting letter for that man to be asking you to hand your son?
Oh, no. No, you can see how fair he means to be.
Fair? Do you suppose it ever occurs to him that I'm doing my simple duty? That I'm doing what my father would do if he were alive? He's got my mother's name bandied up and down the streets of this town until I can't step in those streets without wondering what every soul I meet is thinking of me and my family. And now he wants you to marry him so that every gossip in town will say... There, what did I tell you? I guess that proves it's true.
But George, it isn't true.
Is it fair for him to want you to throw away your good name just to please him? That's all he asks of you. And to quit being my mother? Do you think I can believe you really care for him? Don't. You're my mother, and you're an Amberson. I believe you're too proud to care for a man who could write such a letter as that. Well, what are you going to do about it, Mother?
George, dear, I have been out the mailbox, darling, with a letter
I've written Eugene, and he'll have it in the morning. I think it is a little better for me to write you like this, instead of waiting till you wake up and then telling you, because I'm foolish and might cry again. And I took a vow once, long ago, that you should never see me cry. Not that I'll feel like crying when we talk things over tomorrow. Don't fear. By that time, I'll be all right and fine, as you say so often. I think what makes me most ready to cry now is the thought of the terrible suffering in your poor face, and the unhappy knowledge that it is I, your mother, who put it there. It shall never come again. I love you better than anything and everything else on earth. And Eugene was right. I know you couldn't change about this. So I've written him just about what I think he would like me to. Though I told him I would always be fond of him and always be his best friend. And I hope his dearest friend. He'll understand about not seeing him. He'll understand that. Though I didn't say it in so many words. You mustn't trouble about that. Eugene will understand. Good night, my darling. My beloved, you mustn't be troubled. I think I shouldn't mind anything very much so long as I have you all to myself, people say, to make up for your long years away from me, college. We'll talk of what's best to do in the morning, shan't we? And for all this pain, you'll forgive your loving and devoted mother.
Three weeks later, George and his mother went abroad. Isabel never returned. Nearly 2 years later, a small item tucked away in one of the back sheets of a morning paper announced the death in Paris of a Mrs. Isabel Amberson Minifer. This is all there was. And there were only a few people left in the Midland town to whom either name, Minifer or Amberson, meant anything. Some weeks later, George returned only to learn from his Uncle Fred what couldn't be kept secret any longer. The Amberson estate was gone. What with extravagances, taxes, and the new order of things, suddenly there was nothing left.
Well, here we are, Nephew George. All that's left of the Ambersons. Two gentlemen of elegant appearance in a state of bustitude. A few years ago, we wouldn't have thought it, eh? That's how it is. Life and money, they're like loose quicksilver in a nest of cracks. When they're gone, we can't tell where or what the devil we did with them.
What are you going to do, Uncle Fred?
Oh, don't worry about me in this new world. I'll be contented with just surviving. Get a consulship somewhere. Next congressman can always be pretty sure of getting some such job. I live pleasantly enough with a pitcher of ice under a palm tree and native folk to wait on me. What about you, George? What will you do?
The night George saw his uncle off, he walked homeward slowly through what appeared to be strange streets in a strange city. For the town was growing and changing as it had never grown and changed before. It was heaving up in the middle incredibly. And as it heaved and spread, it befouled itself and darkened its sky. From day to day, from week to week, great new industries were springing up, steel and oil, and this new, all-conquering thing, the automobile. strange people swarmed about him, obliterating, destroying every trace of the magnificence that once was Amberson. Destroying with it the last of the Ambersons, George Amberson Minifer. The city rolled over his heart and buried it, as the city had rolled over Ambersons and buried them. For the last vestige, the thing had happened. The thing which years ago had been the eagerest hope of many. The hope of many good citizens had finally come to pass. But not one of them was there to see it. George Amberson Minifer got his comeuppance. He got it three times filled and running over. Later, as he walked down Amberson Boulevard, now known as 10th Street, and filled with second-rate shops and cheap boarding houses, and climbed the stairs of the old house for the last time, a terrible loneliness assailed him. He opened the door softly into Isabel's room. It was still as it had been. Tomorrow everything would be gone, and soon after that the very space which tonight was still her room would be cut into new shapes by new walls and floors and ceilings. Yet Isabel's room would always live, for it couldn't die out of George's memory. And whatever remains of that old, high-handed arrogance was still within him. He did penance for his deepest sin that night. And it may be to this day, some impressionable, overworked woman in a kitchenette, after turning out the light, will seem to see a young man kneeling in the darkness, clutching at the covers of a shadowy bed. And it may seem to her that she hears a faint cry over and over.
Mother. Mother, forgive me. Mother. Mother. Forgive me.
You must have guessed by now who George Amberson Minifer was. Take my word for it, please, that the George Amberson Minifer who was is no more.
Papa.
Why, Lucy, what brings you downtown this morning?
I tried to get you at one of the factories, but no one could locate you. I wanted to talk to you, Papa. Are you very busy?
I'm never too busy to talk to you, Lucy. Is something wrong?
Yes, Papa, there is something wrong. It's George.
George? You mean...
Yes, Papa. George Minifer.
Well?
He's been hurt, badly hurt. He's in the city hospital. Both his legs broken.
That's too bad.
He was run down by an automobile.
An automobile? George Amberson Minifer. Run down by an automobile.
Papa, do you know what he's been doing the past 2 years?
No. No, and I couldn't honestly say, Lucy, that I'm very interested.
He's been working with explosives at the Acres Chemical Company. A dangerous job. The most dangerous job there is.
No, I never thought he lacked nerve, Lucy.
You don't understand, Papa. No one else would take the job. He needed work so badly he took it, and Papa, he's made good. He's changed. He's not the old George at all. And now this has happened to him.
Well?
I want you to go to see him.
No, Lucy. After all, you can't expect me to have any particular affection for that young man.
I'm sure that Isabel...
Isabel. Isabel's been dead 3 years. 3 years. If it hadn't been for him, she might...
It's what she would want you to do, Papa. You know that. She'd want you to be kind. She'd want you to come with me to the hospital. He's lonely, Papa. His heart's broken. He needs us. We can help him. You could do so much for him, and I could... Well, Papa, what are you going to do?
Isabel, my dear, up there in that small, bare hospital room this afternoon, you were by my side.
Do you remember, Isabel, that last day we were together? You said that things in our lives were like smoke, and time like the sky through which the smoke vanishes. And I told you that for us, things did not change like that, and we would always be together. You were with me when I walked into that room where your son was lying, with Lucy sitting beside him. He felt you, too. He lifted his hand in a queer gesture, half forbidding, half imploring. "You come," he said. "You must have thought my mother wanted you to come so that I could ask you to forgive me." And as he held my hand in his, if you could have seen Lucy's face at that moment, dear Isabel, she was radiant. But for me, another radiance filled the room. For then I knew that I had been true to you at last, my true love, and that through me, you had brought your boy under shelter again.
This concludes our Campbell Playhouse presentation of The Magnificent Ambersons, starring Walter Huston and Orson Welles.
The Campbell Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday, featuring Orson Welles and his Mercury Theater Players, in a broadcast nearly a year after the War of the Worlds, from October 29, 1939 on CBS. And that wraps up this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.